You're an important part of the Grace to You family. Hi, this is John MacArthur. Thanks for following along today by podcast or audio stream. Be sure to take advantage of the 3,000 full-length sermon downloads available free at gty.org. Now, today's edition of Grace to You.
He is the closest thing to a Bible superhero, a man whose strength seemingly had no limits. Yet his life is a cautionary tale for anyone who would trust in his own power. It's the story of Samson, next on Grace to You. You'd have to say that superheroes are some of the most popular individuals in the world today. The stars of blockbuster movies, television shows, and books, and they're not even real. But, you know, there was a real man who essentially was a superhero, and his name was, you probably guessed it already, Samson. Yet, what made this man a hero, a member of the Biblical Hall of Fame, wasn't his unmatched strength. It wasn't all the enemies of Israel he killed. To see what really made him a hero, what Samson's life can teach you about God, and what he expects from those who follow him, stay with us today on Grace to You as John MacArthur is continuing a new series of some of Scripture's unlikely heroes. We're heading to the book of Judges today, chapter 13, as John MacArthur begins today's lesson.
The beginning of the story of Samson is sort of like the beginning of the story of Gideon. Gideon and Samson, as far as personal dispositions are concerned, couldn't have been more opposite. Gideon was timid and weak and cowardly. Samson was brash and reckless and indomitable. Gideon saw himself as inadequate. Samson saw himself as invincible. Let's go to the 13th chapter of Judges. The Israelites, once again, are under the constant marauding, attacking power of another enemy, the Philistines. And after years of oppression by the Philistines, which is the judgment of God upon their apostasy again, the angel of the Lord comes to commission a new deliverer because the people are finally crying out to God to be delivered from the Philistines. The angel of the Lord shows up in chapter 13 at a home, and there's a husband and a wife there. The husband's name is Manoah. He is the father of Samson. God comes to him in the form of the one called the angel of the Lord. And Manoah makes an offering, realizing that he needs to honor the Lord for this visit. Samson's mother had never had any children. She was barren before the visit of the angel of the Lord. And the angel of the Lord tells Manoah, the father, he appears to Manoah that he and his wife are going to have a son, and he's going to be a very special son. And he tells Manoah to tell his wife some very, very important things. During her pregnancy, she is not to drink wine. She is not to eat anything or ceremonially unclean. So she is to be detached from both wine and any unclean food. After the child is born, she is to treat him in a very unique way. She is never to cut his hair because Samson is going to be a Nazarite. Nazarite comes from the Hebrew word to separate, to separate. Number 6 specifies what the Nazarite vow was. No drinking of alcohol, no cutting of the hair, no touching of a dead body. This was to symbolize the life of separation, the life of commitment to holiness. The Nazarite vow could be for a period of time or it could be for life. In the case of Samson, it was for life. Samson then, from his birth, was instructed by his parents that he was to live that Nazarite life. However, during his life, he violated all three of those things. He touched a dead body in Judges 14. He drank at a wedding feast, also in Judges 14. And he allowed his head to be shaved in Judges 16. He didn't keep his vow, the symbolic part of his separation, and he certainly didn't live a separated life. He was a man driven by fleshly desires, illicit, unrestrained passion, particularly for pagan women. He had a stubborn will. He had irrational desires. He had a violent temper. He had a volatile, combustible personality. He had a wild disregard for the commandments of the Lord. And all of that combined to make his life a legendary tragedy, with the very center of that tragedy being his infatuation for Philistine women. I guess you could say Samson is the only person who crashed his own wedding. In spite of Samson's flagrant sin, for which he paid a horrific price, God still had a purpose for him when he got his spiritual act together at the very end. God used him to rescue Israel from Philistine oppression and aggression. Well, it all began when, as a young man, he insisted on marrying a Philistine woman, a union expressly forbidden by God in Deuteronomy 7. But he's going to marry this Philistine woman, this idolatrous woman, because he liked the way she looked. That's what it says in Judges 14. If you're in Judges, go to the 14th chapter. He saw the young woman. She was pleasing in his sight. And what does that tell you? That his interest was superficial. His parents tried to dissuade him from disobeying God. He ignored their counsel. He got his way. He decided to marry her. So he starts in Judges 14:6 to go to the town where she lived. And he's ambushed by a lion. That was not uncommon in ancient Israel. There were mountain lions there, as there are around here. The odds would normally favor the predatory cat, I think, with sharp claws and ferocious fangs, but this lion was about to be a victim. Judges 14:6, do you see it there? The Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon Samson. He tore the lion apart as one would have torn apart a young goat, though he had nothing in his hand. Wow. Several months later, Samson was passing that way again. He saw the lion's carcass there and went to investigate. I think he probably thought that it would be full of flies and maggots. Instead, he found inside the lion a colony of bees had taken up residence, and they were producing honey. Avoiding the dead body was supposed to be consistent with his Nazirite vow, but he ignored that, reached into the carcass, collected honey, and ate it as he walked along the road, even offering some to his parents. The betrothal period came to an end, and it was time for him to go marry this Philistine. Wedding preparations were made. They notified Samson, and he traveled back to his fiancée's hometown for the feast, and the feast would last for 7 days. It consisted among the Philistines primarily of a drunken brawl, 7 days of drinking. The biblical text tells us here in this chapter that Samson was joined by 30 Philistine young men. The bride had her bridesmaids, and these were the best man's attendants. 30 pagan, idolatrous Philistines were going to stand alongside Samson. In an effort to embarrass these 30 Philistines, show them up, Samson, who was likely drunk himself, challenged them to an impossible riddle about the lion killing and the honey. Remember that? Samson said to them, this is in Judges 14:12-14, "Let me pose a riddle to you. If you can correctly solve and explain it to me within 7 days of the feast, I'll give you 30 linen garments, 30 changes of clothing. If you can't explain it to me, then you give me 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing." And they said to him, "Pose your riddle that we may hear it." So he said to them, "Out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet." For 3 days, they couldn't understand or explain the riddle. They get frustrated. They corner his wife in the middle of the marriage event. And they tell her, "If you don't tell us the answer to the riddle, we will burn you." They didn't mean with a curling iron. "We will burn you to death. And then we will burn your father's house with your family in it. Tell us." And they relentlessly pled, and she gave in. So the Philistine men, the 30 men, come back, and they give the right answer. Samson is furious. He knows his new bride has betrayed him. He is so enraged that he travels to Ashkelon, a Philistine city 23 miles away. He has a very long cooling off period. He walks 23 miles. When he gets to Ashkelon, he kills 30 men, and he strips them of all their clothing in order to make good on the promise to give clothing to 30 men. And he trudges back, still fuming, after a 50-mile round trip. And he is still so infuriated that he leaves the wedding and goes home. That nightmarish wedding occurred in early springtime. After some months of sulking, he decided to return to his wife around the time of wheat harvest. Chapter 14. He's going to go back now and make things right. Unknown to him, his father-in-law, who assumed the angry groom would never return, has given his daughter to someone else. She's already married to someone else. Verse 20 of 14, Samson's wife was given to his companion who had been his friend. Samson shows up at the house. I'm here. Can we pick up the wedding where we left it off? He even shows up with a goat, like a peace offering. His father-in-law won't let him in. Reconciliation was his hope. Rage becomes his response. So he takes his anger out. He captures 300 foxes. The word is actually jackals, and jackals were more familiar. It's kind of like a cross between a wolf and a coyote. They had a long tail. So he ties their tails together, and he's got then 150 pairs, yelping pairs of jackals. And he torches their tails, sets them on fire, and sends them frantically zigzagging through the Philistines' grain fields. And they set everything on fire, destroying everything in the path from grain fields to vineyards to olive groves. When the Philistines find out what he's done to their crops, they blame his father-in-law to be. So they go burn him. And they burn the woman that he was going to marry as well. So the very thing she tried to avoid, getting burned in the first place, ends up happening to her. When he hears that they have burned the woman that he decided he really wanted to marry, who had already been married, he is angry again. This man is so out of control, it's almost incomprehensible. He accepts no blame for the circumstances leading to her death and the death of the father-in-law. He is so angry with the Philistines, God uses his anger providentially to be the instrument of judgment continually on the Philistines. Judges 15:8. He attacked them hip and thigh with a great slaughter. Then he went down and hid in a cleft of the rock at Edom. Hip and thigh is simply a sort of a colloquial expression, top to bottom. With their fields scorched and their kinsmen slain, the Philistines have had enough. So they get an army. Go down into chapter 15 at about verse 10. They get an army, and they come toward the men of Israel. And the men of Israel say, "What are you doing? Why are you coming at us?" And they said, "We've come to arrest Samson. We want Samson." Chapter 15, verse 10. "And we want to do to him what he's been doing to us. Give us Samson." The threat is, if you don't give us Samson, we're going to do to you what has been done to us. His reputation was such that even his fellow Israelites were afraid of him, so they say, "Okay, we'll go get him," and they take 3,000 men to get him. 3,000 men to bring him back, to deliver him to the Philistines. He agrees to go. I think out of curiosity and knowing the strength that he had, he was afraid of no one. In some meager effort, they decide to tie him up with some new rope. And they bring him in tied up. Verse 14 of chapter 15, the Philistines came shouting against him. Then the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and the ropes that were on his arms became like flax that is burned with fire, and his bonds broke loose from his hands. He snaps the new ropes. He faces his attacker like a superhero for sure, picks up the nearest object lying on the ground, which happens to be the jawbone of a donkey lying on the ground, and he goes after them. With the jawbone of a donkey, he kills 1,000 of them. 1,000 of them with a 9-inch jawbone. At least that's what I've heard is the average donkey jawbone, ancient donkey jawbone. And then he gets all the bodies. He not only kills them all, but he piles them all in a heap, and he calls the name of the place Ramath Lehi, which means Jawbone Hill. And then he claims credit for himself. And in verse 16 of chapter 15, he sings a song to himself. With the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps. With the jawbone of a donkey, I have killed 1,000 men. Well, it was some kind of an effort to kill 1,000 men and pile up their bodies. So he's exhausted. In verse 18, he's very thirsty. And he calls to the Lord. He knows the truth. He called to the Lord and said, "You've given this great deliverance by the hand of your servant. And now you're going to let me die of thirst and fall into the hands of these uncircumcised? I'm thirsty." He's thirsty to the point of death. He does acknowledge that God had given this great deliverance. And God does something wonderful. He gives him water out of a rock to this very, very bizarre, complex, angry man. But after all of this, there is the recognition, "God, you did this." And verse 20, he judged Israel 20 years. He delivered Israel 20 years in the days of the Philistines. The Lord delivered him from life-threatening dehydration. For the first time in his life, he experienced weakness. There were no Philistines around, and he was weak when God didn't give that power to him, and he only gave it to him when the Philistines were there. For 2 decades, they were given a reprieve from the Philistines. Although they would continue to trouble Israel long after Samson's lifetime, he broke the back of their early dominance. And in his death, he struck them with the final blow. The closing drama of Samson's life, you all know. It is an incredible story. The final chapter begins when he does what he does. He starts looking at Philistine women again. And he finds one named Delilah. Now we're in chapter 16. And the story is even more sordid than that. Even before he met Delilah, the text says he visited a prostitute in Gaza. Prostitute? 16:1-3. While he was with the prostitute, the men of Gaza were informed that he was there with a prostitute. Now remember, he has for 20 years been protecting Israel. And so they decide, "We're going to capture him." That was fruitless. Because the Spirit of God comes upon him, he uproots the city gates, the gates of the city of Gaza, carries them, the gates, on his shoulders to the hills of Hebron, 38 miles away. So you see his superhuman strength and his super sinful weakness. Fatal attraction was his life. He fixes his lust on this woman, Delilah, and disaster is inevitable. The Philistines put her in his path so that he sees her, he wants her, and it's a plot. She's going to get close to him, and she's going to find the secret to his strength. They tell her, "We will give you 5,500 shekels of silver." 5,500 shekels of silver. Biblical scholars have said that the average yearly wage was 10 shekels of silver. 5,500 shekels of silver. That's 550 times that amount. That would be 550 years of wages, a fortune. No amount was too high to eliminate the deadly enemy. She was well paid. With a fortune at stake, Delilah was happy to seduce this Hebrew strongman. She manipulates him and manipulates him over and over again in chapter 16, verse 6, 8, 10, 14. Finally, in Judges 16, 16, and 17, came to pass when she pestered him daily with her words, pressed him so that his soul was vexed to death. He told her all his heart and said to her, "No razor's ever come upon my head, for I've been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If I'm shaven, my strength will leave me and I'll be weak and be like any other man." He would be weak like any other man. So they say, all right, we're going after him. They arrive, the Philistines arrive. He's helpless, shorn of his hair. The harrowing words of the text are these. He didn't know that the Lord had departed from him. He didn't know. The breach of his life, the sin of his life, it reached the turning point with God. Long blinded by might, long blinded by arrogance, long blinded by lust, he is now blinded by his captors, who, according to verse 21 of chapter 16, gouge out his eyes at Gaza. And he's now a blind grinder, like a mule tied to a wooden grinder that goes in a circle grinding grain, utterly humiliated. Philistines give credit for Samson's demise to the god Dagon. They have a great celebration in the temple. They're celebrating that Dagon has defeated the great Samson. The festivities escalate, the madness increases. They demand to see this man, this strong man, humiliated. Judges 16:25, they say, go get him, bring him in, let's mock him, let's laugh at him. He stumbles blindly into the scornful jests. He asks what seems like a small courtesy since he's blind and he's only gone wherever they have forced him to go. And he says, could you put me in a place between the two central pillars so I can steady myself? Archaeological evidence indicates that the whole roof, literally its power, its force, came down through those two main pillars and transferred to the foundation. From an engineering perspective, the weight of the perimeter would be drawn to those pillars and down to the foundation. Without those pillars, the entire roof would collapse and bring down the entire building. Samson, without seeing anything, knew where he was as he felt the two pillars. And he asks the Lord for strength. In one climactic, self-sacrificing, heroic act, according to Judges 16, verses 27 and 28. Now the temple was full of men and women. All the lords of the Philistines were there, about 3,000 men and women, on the roof, watching while Samson performed. Then Samson called to the Lord, saying, O Lord God, remember me, I pray, a broken man now, a penitent man, a humble man. Strengthen me, I pray, just this once, O God, that I may with one blow take vengeance on the Philistines for my two eyes. Personal vengeance was always an issue with him. Even in this great moment, he couldn't completely divorce himself from his personal vengeance. But there was something larger than that that moved his heart, because he was now willing to give his life to protect his people from their deadly enemies. The Spirit of God heard his prayer, and in a flash of divine energy, supernatural strength poured into his body. With one hand on each column, and he began to push. Those monolithic columns began to move. He knew God had empowered him. As soon as he felt them move in an explosion of unimaginable power, he dislodged the columns in a catastrophic crash. The massive wood stone plaster structure crushed everyone. All 3,000 were killed. More than he had slain in his whole life, he had slain his hundreds. So Judges 16:30 says, the dead he killed at his death were more than he killed in his life. Samson died penitent, broken, and humble. He died for the cause of his nation and the cause of his God. His God had said, remove the Philistines, remove them from the land. People had not done that. In a final act of faith, he cries out to God to be an instrument by which he can do the will of God and destroy the enemies of God. And God hears his prayer.
That's John MacArthur with a character sketch of Samson, a strong man that God made weak. His number 5 on the list of unlikely heroes that John is covering in his current series of messages here on Grace to You. John, last week and a half now you've looked at the great accomplishments of Enoch, Joseph, Miriam, Gideon, and now Samson. A question, would it be accurate to say that these heroes are not really the main characters in the story, that in a sense their heroic deeds aren't theirs?
Yeah, they're not the main characters in their stories. God is the main character in their stories. There are no human explanations for the exploits of these people. When I decided to put this book together, 12 Unlikely Heroes, I looked for people who would never be the explanation for what they were able to accomplish, so that it would be clear that this was the work of God. We brought together 12 most amazing and remarkable people that stretch from early in the book of Genesis all the way through the New Testament and show us how God works through the lives of very unlikely people to literally change the course of history. The publishers have not been this excited about a book in many years, at least not any book that I have written. They are very enthusiastic about the thrill that people are going to have to read these stories. I know you've heard Sunday school stories about Enoch and Joseph and Miriam, Gideon, Samson, and others, but we're coming at those stories in a very different way. You're going to love reading those stories, those familiar names, as well as about John Mark and Onesimus and John the Baptist and James, the brother of Jesus. The book title in full, 12 Unlikely Heroes. The subtitle, How God Commissioned Unexpected People in the Bible and What He Wants to Do with You. Get a copy of this brand new hardback book today from Grace to You. Again, 12 Unlikely Heroes.
You know, there's much to learn from the characters in the Bible, both about their obedience and faith and the power and providence of God. To pick up John's new book, 12 Unlikely Heroes, contact us today. The cost is $14 and shipping is free. You can order your copy when you go to our website, gty.org, or when you call our toll-free number anytime, 1-800-55-GRACE. Again, the title of John's latest book, 12 Unlikely Heroes. Order by going to gty.org or calling 1-800-55-GRACE. Now keep in mind that John is still preaching on these unlikely heroes at his home church in Southern California. You can download each message free at gty.org or sign up for the free pulpit podcast that gets you to John's new Sunday sermons just a few days after he preaches them. The MP3 downloads and the pulpit podcast are yours free at gty.org. And if you're grateful for these lessons, a broadcast that you heard recently, maybe John's series on the elements of true prayer, or the series, Whose Money Is It Anyway, let me encourage you to get in touch with us. You can send your response by email to letters@gty.org or write to Grace to You at Box 4000, Panorama City, California, 91412. For John MacArthur, I'm your host, Carl Miller, reminding you that you can see Grace to You Television Sundays on DirecTV Channel 378 or watch online at gty.org. Then join us right here tomorrow as John continues unleashing God's truth, one verse at a time, on Grace to You. His dad was the king of Israel, and the throne would be his one day, but God had other plans for this memorable and unlikely hero. That's our subject tomorrow on the next Grace to You.